Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Suicide is a topic that hides in the shadows. It's time we talk away the dark, learn how to spot the warning signs for suicide, and how you can have an open, caring, real conversation to help save lives. Visit the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention to watch the new short film and learn more at afsp.org/talkawaythedark.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is WBEZ's Weekly News Recap. We're back, taking you inside the biggest local and state stories of the week. Stories like questions around another police shooting.
A grieving mother still unsure why her son, Anthony Alvarez, is dead, shot as he ran away from police just a block away from his Portage Park home late last month.
Serious accusations aimed at city employees.
Investigators for the Park District have been looking into allegations of widespread serious sexual misconduct involving lifeguards at the city's pools and beaches.
The mayor unveils a massive infrastructure plan.
We're looking at $3.7 billion over the next 5 years, invested in all 77 of Chicago's neighborhoods.
And Chicago politicians doing what Chicago politicians are famous for.
The latest politicians facing federal charges are Alderman Patrick Daley Thompson and former Alderman Ricardo Munoz.
Joining us this week on the recap, Manny Ramos, reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, and Paris Schutz, host and reporter for WTTW. Paris, we just heard that last bit of sound, a former and current alderman under indictment. Give us the details.
Well, there's Alderman Patrick Daley Thompson, and that middle name is no stranger to Chicago, and the nephew of former Mayor Richard M. Daley, the grandson of former Mayor Richard J. Daley, and he is charged with making false statements and filing false tax claims to the IRS, and this is in connection with this giant probe of massive fraud of Washington Federal Bank and Savings in Bridgeport. That's a bank that is now defunct. It failed. It had $66 million in bad loans. And I would point your listeners to the reporting of Tim Novak in the Sun-Times investigating all the crazy things this bank did. In this case, what's alleged is that Daley Thompson got $219,000 in loans. And he made one payment on it, and that was it. And wow. then he made a bunch of false statements about it. And then there's former alderman Ricardo Munoz.
Yeah, a 29-page indictment was made public yesterday. What are the main charges there?
He used this political action committee money for his own personal expenses, like going traveling and going to basketball games. And then there's a purchase at Lover's Lane in this indictment. And, you know, he was part of the progressive caucus on city council, which was sort of the liberal counterbalance to Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And he, you know, kind of fancied himself as a progressive politician, did things the right way. But it turns out, according to these allegations, it was anything but that.
All right, we're going to shift directions. Manny, you've been covering the census for the last 2 years. Can you tell us what the census results that were released this week mean for the state?
For those that don't know, the census is a nationwide headcount that is done every 10 years that essentially decides how states receive federal funding for social services, among other things, and how states are represented in Congress. Well, this week we finally got the first batch of data from the once-a-decade count, and Illinois was able to avoid its worst-case scenario of losing two seats in the House of U.S. Representatives. But we'll still ultimately end up losing one. And this loss, as you know, will also have an effect on the number of votes the state gets in the Electoral College. So what this means is instead of sending 18 members to Congress, the state, under the new reappropriation, will only be sending 17 members. And it's more than likely that that seat will be lost somewhere downstate, though there is still fear that the state might lose one black majority district as the redrawing of congressional districts begin. The fear is that, you know, districts will grow larger and move further south or west into majority white communities, which could tip the scale into potentially losing a black congressperson. But again, that's all theoretical at this point. Currently, the state has three black majority districts and one Hispanic majority district. This isn't something new, though, for Illinois. I mean, the state has been losing seats in the House as a result of the census for decades now. In 1970, we had 24 seats, but, you know, every 10 years since, we've seen a loss of one or two seats. But overall speaking, the population fell about 18,000 between April 2010 census to April 2020 census, and the state is one of three states in the country to actually lose population as a result of the 2010 count.
Mayor Lightfoot launched her infrastructure improvement plan. Paris, what do you know about that?
Well, over multiple years, apparently supposed to be about $1.4 billion, but paid for by borrowing against future property taxes. I didn't even know the city had the capacity to borrow any more than it already has. With infrastructure, these are kind of like little gifts to aldermen to maybe entice them to stay on her side. And, you know, they're going to be up for re-election in 2023. It always looks better when you got a nice little renewed streetscape in your ward and a new library building. But, you know, infrastructure is a good thing. The city needs to upgrade its infrastructure. It needs to upgrade its streets. I'll be curious to see whether Congress passes the Biden infrastructure plan and whether some of that federal money can cover these costs.
While we're on the topic of infrastructure and roads, Outer Lakeshore Drive might be getting a new name. Manny, what do we know so far about that?
Well, on Thursday, Chicago City Council backed the renaming of, as you mentioned, Outer Lakeshore Drive from Hollywood Avenue to about 67th Street in honor of John Batiste Puente DuSable, though it came at an objection from Mayor Lightfoot. This is a proposal that Alderman David Moore, the 17th Ward, and Alderman Sophia King of the 14th Ward have been pushing for the last couple of years. And for those, again, who don't know, DuSable is considered the first non-Indigenous settler of Chicago. You know, he's a Black man of Haitian descent, who was thought to be the founder of Chicago. It was a contentious meeting where Moore and others called a substitute ordinance by the Lightfoot administration racist. It was ultimately contentious, but passed anyways.
And WBEZ also had a big story this week. Our own Dan Mihalopoulos released his investigation about widespread misconduct and sexual harassment among lifeguards. Paris, what did you make of this story and of the city's response?
Well, it's stunning and, as usual, amazing work by your own Dan Mihalopoulos for digging into this and getting this Inspector General report. Apparently, the Inspector General has been probing at least sexual harassment claims against at least three or more lifeguards, claims of violence, retaliation. And, you know, this week, Mayor Lightfoot held a press conference involving the Park District, but Park District Commissioner Mike Kelly wasn't there. Kelly has been there for years and years, goes back to the Emanuel administration. And I wonder if Kelly himself is going to survive this. Not that there's any accusation against him or that he knew about any of this, but apparently these things were happening under his watch.
Let's talk about police for a moment. This week we saw video footage of yet another fatal shooting by Chicago police. That was 22-year-old Anthony Alvarez of Portage Park. Manny, can you fill us in on those details?
Sure. So the video of a police officer shooting and killing Anthony Alvarez on March 31st was released this week by the Civilian Office of Police Accountability. The Alvarez story has largely been eclipsed by the death of 13-year-old Adam Toledo, who was killed by a police officer in Little Village only 2 days before. But the video shows a very similar situation to Toledo, with police officers chasing Alvarez through the Portage Park neighborhood, where when Alvarez turns on the 5200 block of West Eddy Street, according to the video, he appears to trip. When he gets back up to run again, police shoot him in the back. To me, anyways, while I'm viewing the video, they didn't appear to show him turning or raising the gun in any way at the officer. But after being shot, Alvarez, you know, asked the officer, "Why are you shooting me?" The cop responded, "You had a gun." A third-party camera appears to show a gun on the lawn as an officer renders aid to Alvarez, who ultimately you know, succumbs to his injury. But this is another instance of young Latinos being shot and killed by police officers. But what remains unclear is what initiated that foot chase. You know, Mayor Lightfoot referred to it as a minor traffic offense, you know, leading to a tragic death. But Chicago's top cop refuses to comment on, you know, citing an ongoing COPPA investigation.
Yeah, the Latino community is crying out here. Are you sensing, Manny, a growing tension between that community and police?
It's hard to say whether or not there's a growing tension or not. What is growing, I think, is the call for transparency, the call for, you know, some sort of reform. The Latino community in Chicago is not a monolith, so it's really difficult to say, you know, what some folks are feeling. But I think the need for transparency is definitely being called for.
A few years ago, right after Laquan McDonald, there was another police-involved shooting, and it was shot in the back, a guy named Ronnie Johnson. He was with a gun. He was resisting arrest. He ran away. He was shot and killed. And at the time, authorities did not bring charges against the police officer. And he said it was justified that you can shoot in the back if the person is armed because they're deemed a threat to the community. That law is different now. The shooting is only justified if the police officer feels imminent danger, that they're going to be harmed. And that's what's going to be looked at here in this Alvarez case. And that being said, the legal standard is still going to be very high to bring any kind of charges against the officer, Officer Solano. And there's a difference between the legal standard and the moral standard. We don't know why police were chasing this young man. We don't know why this happened. But from a legal standard, if he has a gun and he is running, it's going to be very hard to bring charges against the officer.
That's Paris Schutz of WTTW. Also with us on the recap today is Manny Ramos of the Chicago Sun-Times. Paris, Manny, there's plenty more to talk about. Let's listen.
Governor Pritzker will announce a new program to provide education and resources in areas with vulnerable populations, as new studies show more people are hesitant to get the coronavirus vaccine.
Justin Fields is an excellent draft prospect. He
falls
to number 11 overall, and the Chicago Bears go get him.
You want to have a bigger wedding, which we've been hearing from a lot of you about. Make sure your guests get vaccinated, and you can have a bigger wedding safely.
Effective immediately. Increase indoor and outdoor capacity. Fans back in the stands at the United Center and lakefront beaches reopening.
All right, who's ready for some good news this week? Looks like people are getting vaccinated and life might slowly be getting back to normal. Is that right, Paris?
Well, I mean, I think the vaccination rates have to continue to go up. People just need to keep getting vaccinated so the city gets to that 70% or so threshold for herd immunity. But yes, somewhat back to normal. We'll see farmers markets and street festivals this summer. We missed them so much last year, but they'll be partially attended. You'll still have to sort of have space limits with people. You'll still have to wear masks. And then at Bulls and Blackhawks games at the United Center, they announced they're going to do 20% capacity. They're allowed 25%, but for social distancing, they're going to do 20%. For now, and maybe in the coming weeks as those rates continue to improve, and hopefully as this curve bends downward, it's kind of stubborn right now. It's, you know, kind of staying around 4% positivity in the state, 5% in the city. But those vaccination rates have to keep going. It has to outpace the rate of spread of the variant. And then the restrictions can get loosened even more.
What about restaurants and bars, Paris?
50% capacity right now. Some restaurants and bars might be a little creative in how they decide what 50% capacity looks like. But, you know, certainly it's a welcome development. Most live theater venues say it's still not enough to really support doing shows and paying everybody and paying the actors. So it doesn't mean that can really come back yet. There are some venues doing live music right now. The Green Mill has been doing it at limited capacity. So it's really tenuous for those venues to really reopen until there is almost close to full capacity allowed.
Manny, do you think you'll be checking out any live shows anytime soon? What would it take to get you back into the seats?
I don't know if I'm quite ready there yet. Reason being, I just had a daughter. Being extremely cautious, probably overly and too cautious, but if people are vaccinated and continue to follow CDC guidelines, you know, I should go for it.
I want to talk sports for a bit. Let's talk about the United Center opening, Manny.
Yeah, so UC is opening up. It comes with, you know, the Bulls only having a few games left, as well as the Blackhawks. I believe the Bulls' first game with fans will be May 7th against the Celtics, and the Hawks will face off against the Stars on May 9th. Yeah, it's exciting, I guess, for sports to be back and a signal for the next season.
We've got one more big sports story this week, and that involves the Bears. Can you tell us about that, Manny?
Yeah, it's exciting to be a Bears fan this morning. The team traded up its number 20 pick to the New York Giants for its number 11th pick to pick up one of the best QBs in the 2021 NFL draft class, and that was Ohio State's Justin Fields. The Bears had to, you know, move around quite a few things. They moved the first-round pick in this year's and next year's, as well as an additional fourth-round pick in 2022, and I believe a fifth-round pick in 2021. But in my opinion, it's worth it. I mean, the Bears get a dynamic playmaker with an amazing, strong arm, and it comes with the, when the team was sort of in this limbo state of a QB, right? They were unable to secure a successful, talented QB in the offseason. We got Dalton for some reason. But now we have to see if Matt Nagy can truly develop Fields into the QB Chicago has desperately needed.
Yeah, my Twitter feed was going nuts. Paris, weigh in here. What do you think of this Bears
pick? Well,
I
got to tell you, if we remember 4 years ago when GM Ryan Pace traded up to get Mitch Trubisky, the supposed franchise quarterback. But I got to tell you, this feels different.
It does.
Because back then, Trubisky was unproven. It was a stretch. He was 8-5 in his senior year at North Carolina, and he didn't even play before that. This guy, Justin Fields, has all the tools. Ohio State, all he did was win on the biggest stages. All he did was throw touchdowns and throw for incredible statistics. So there's far more known about this guy than Trubisky. And to me, it feels like far more likely this guy has a chance to develop into a franchise QB and a Pro Bowler than Trubisky. That was a total roll of the dice.
Mm-hmm.
This one here, the consensus seems to be this was totally worth, you know, what they gave up to get up there. And finally, and by the way, in one day, I've never seen the fortunes for the Bears at least seem to turn so much in one day. Not only did they get their franchise quarterback, but the nemesis, Aaron Rodgers, says he never wants to play for Green Bay again. I mean, I don't think I've ever, since 1985, there may not have been one better day to be a Bears fan. But we'll see how it turns out on the field.
Yeah, I was watching my Twitter timeline just go wild. People are like, oh my God, it's happening. It's happening. Oh, it happened. You know, it just went crazy. And I knew that something of a big deal happened, for sure.
Bears fans deserve it. They deserve some excitement after lots of decades of quarterback futility.
And it's just so wild that he dropped to the 11th pick, right? Like, that was
right.
Something that everyone was shocked over.
Manny, you updated a story this week that many of us remember from a few years back. It was about a Southside Little League team.
Yeah, so a lawsuit involving Jackie Robinson West was settled, and a separate lawsuit against the team's two volunteer coaches were dismissed by Little League International. So I guess for a quick reminder, Jackie Robinson West captivated the city and the nation in 2014 as they made their historic championship run at the Little League World Series. The team was made up of, you know, 13 boys ages 10 to 12 who were all from the South Side. The all-black league team spent, you know, 2 weeks on the road competing and ultimately defeating a team from Las Vegas to win the U.S. championship. But they ended up losing to a team from South Korea in the world championship game. You know, they were welcomed with huge prep rallies. You know, White House flew the boys in to meet President Obama. But soon after, a rival team came out and alleged or accused the Jackie Robinson West team of using ineligible players. You know, Little League initially denied that this was an issue, but then they later came out and said that the president and the treasurer of Jackie Robinson West did, in fact, create false league maps. And they ultimately stripped the title from the team and demanded those administrators be removed from the team. Soon after, those boys, all 13 of them, filed a lawsuit against Little League, asking for their title to be reinstated since they were not aware of the fact that they were ineligible.
Mm.
Little League said the boys on the team had no knowledge they were ineligible, but they still are calling for the title to be reinstated, pointing to the fact of how the Houston Astros kept their 2017 World Series championship even after the sign-stealing scandal.
Mm.
At least the boys, they said, and the coaches had no idea what was going on, and they shouldn't be punished in that far of extent.
Paris, do you remember when that team won back in 2014?
I absolutely do. It was kind of like the Cubs winning the World Series. They
mm-hmm.
absolutely captivated the city, and everybody gathered in bars to watch them. It's such an amazing story, and these kids were amazing. And it really, the administrators, you know, shame on them because these, it's traumatic for these kids to play like this, to put in the work, to win this title, and then to have it stripped from them through nothing that they did. Some of these players, by the way, they're going to play professional ball. I mean, they were that good. So you know, my heart goes out to the kids that still captivated the city, and nothing can take that away from them. Well, they were amazing players, and we all loved watching them.
Do either of you remember the photo of them in their jerseys when they were visiting President Obama at the White House?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and again, nothing can take away those memories, even if the adults here failed them.
And Paris, switching gears, you had a story this week about a possible new buyer for the Tribune. It's a story that we've been talking about here on Reset as well. So what's the latest there?
What we reported was that the nonprofit, the philanthropic community, some of the big names in the philanthropic community in Chicago that have very deep pockets, they've stepped up a little bit more lately in terms of trying to facilitate somebody, because there was a story that came out yesterday. Stuart Bainum is the guy that wants to, you know, buy Tribune Publishing from Alden and prevent an Alden takeover. But what he really needs is at least one more wealthy person in Chicago to put this bid over the top to have enough money to do it. So where the philanthropic groups come in is just trying to facilitate that, finding that person. Now, there is disagreement, though. There are some folks in this world in Chicago that believe that the philanthropic groups like MacArthur and Pritzker Traubert and Ford Foundation, Joyce, Community Trust, all these groups, they should somehow pool their resources and become a nonprofit ownership group. Mostly there's resistance to that. They feel like we're not in the business of running a newspaper. We don't know how to do that. That's not what we should do. But we have deep Rolodexes. We need to find the right person to put this bid from Stuart Bainum over the top.
Well, that's it for the weekly news recap. We have been talking with Chicago Sun-Times reporter Manny Ramos and WTTW political correspondent and co-anchor Paris Schatz. Thank you both for stopping by to talk news and politics. Have a good weekend. And that's the weekly news recap. For smart conversations around what's happening in our city, in our state, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast or check out the Reset archives at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again soon.
Thanks for listening to the news live on WBEZ and NPR. The WBEZ stream sounds great in the kitchen on your smart speaker and anywhere on the WBEZ app. Listen every day.